Faith and Science, What Moves Hearts, the amazing kickoff event for the 2019 Festival of Faiths. The amazing speakers at the kickoff event were unified around the theme of blood, which is literally and physiologically what moves hearts, and which we all share. It's a packed show today, so I won't say much except that it's Ethics Forward on 106.5 FM Forward Radio in lovely downtown Louisville, Kentucky. My name's Avery Kohlers, and this week I'm grateful to Halida Haddock and Sarah Riggs-Reed of the Center for Interfaith Relations for allowing me to broadcast this amazing event, and to Chad Haverly of Breaker Box Productions for actually making the audio recording and sharing it with me, since my recording device was not up to the task. And in just a moment, the 2019 Festival of Faiths kickoff event featuring Halida Haddock, Mayor Greg Fisher, Sarah Riggs-Reed, Dr. Ali Hyder, Garrett Bartholomew, Dr. George Pantelos, Pastor Corey Shaw, and Alex Kimura.
Welcome to the 2019 Festival of Faiths Community Launch. My name is Halida Haddock, and I am the Director of Community Relations and Development with the Center for Interfaith Relations. On behalf of our board of directors, production staff, and entire team, thank you for being here with us this morning. It's an honor to offer you a glimpse of what we have in store for the 24th Annual Festival of Faiths this April. And so today, we officially launch the 24th Annual Festival of Faiths, which is titled Sacred Cosmos, Faith and Science. The festival will take place April 25th to 27th at the Kentucky Center for the Arts. Please mark your calendars. As you saw, Mariah Mitchell wrote, "Scientific investigations pushed on and on will reveal new ways in which God works and brings us deeper revelations of the holy unknown." Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. said, "Science investigates, religion interprets. Religion and science are two hemispheres of human thought." And finally, Rabbi Jonathan Sacks states, "Science takes things apart to see how they work. Religion puts things together to see what they mean." He goes on to say, "The difference between them is fundamental and irreducible. They represent two distinct activities of the mind. Neither is dispensable. Both together constitute a full expression of our humanity. They are as different and as necessary as the twin hemispheres of the brain." The 2019 festival will take us on a deeper exploration of this topic to shed some light on the wisdom present at the crossroads of faith and science. We have a really great program for you today. On that perfect note, it is my profound honor to introduce our first guest this morning. You will hear us talk a lot about North Stars this year. Polaris is symbolic for us in many ways. And the gentleman who is about to join us just so happens to be one of our North Stars. He has courage and heart and humor and lots of compassion. Please help me give a very warm welcome to the honorary co-chair of the Festival of Faith and our esteemed mayor, Greg Fisher.
Good morning, everybody. I just returned from Washington, D.C. for 3.5 days of seeking the truth, and which is a long journey when you're in Washington, D.C. But we had our annual United States Conference of Mayors winter meeting, and one of the new task force that we launched was a Center for Compassionate and Inclusive Cities. And so, of course, So I co-chair that group, and of course, the work that we do in our community was heavily featured. And it made me think about kind of the journey that we've taken as a city. We've had over 20 years now of Festival of Faiths that has been a really important element of our Compassionate City movement. And it gives us, I think, a real opportunity to showcase our attempts to the world, to demonstrate our interconnectedness, our interrelationships that we have in our city, where we know that we're all connected. We know the Thomas Merton Epiphany, just a few blocks away from here, seeing each other shining like the sun, no matter where you live, no matter what you look like, no matter who you love. In some cities, these are radical things for people to be saying now. And as I was listening to other people in other cities trying to enter into this conversation, it made me feel grateful for what we're doing here. And it also, I think, gives us a responsibility to be a model for other folks in other cities, to say, yeah, we do have lots of differences, but we have the one heart that the festival talks about as well. We're going to be advancing our work as a community with a new initiative called Lean Into Louisville, which is a multi-year initiative to lean into all forms of discrimination. When you take a look at the forces that are trying to pull us apart in the country right now, they're loud and they're divisive and they're full of bigotry. So it's our obligation to say that is not the United States of America. That is not this beautifully diverse, multi-religious, multi-racial country that we have. But we can't stay at home on the couch and say that. That's one of the ironies of all this work around compassion in the Festival of Faces. We have to be loud. Loud around these issues that are issues of the heart and issues of the soul. And we have to do that in a way that invites people into the conversation and doesn't pull them out. And that's why I'm so proud of the Festival of Faiths and what it's done, not just for our city, but now it serves as a beacon of the world. And this year's theme of faith and science can take us so many ways. It's always appropriate. Somehow the festival has a topic that's right on point, but it's selected 2 years before. Last year was faith in women, if you remember, in the era past of the Me Too issues. Now it's science, when we have science deniers, for whatever reason it might be, in our country. So when we think about donation and science, and you're going to hear some interesting stories about donations of marrow and blood, of how we can connect faith and science, and really the connectivity of people together, and how we're really trying to rediscover faith in each other, faith in humanity, that we are one group of people that have to figure out our challenges together. This festival is going to give us an unprecedented opportunity to have conversations of relevance both nationally and internationally. So I just want to say thank you all so much for being here. Let's enjoy this beautiful ride, this beautiful journey we're on as a city, realizing we are not perfect. We all get that, but we are leaning into these issues, and we always will end up in a better place. God bless you all. Thank you. Enjoy the festival.
Good morning. I'm Sarah Reed, and I am the Managing Director at the Center for Interfaith Relations, and I will be the moderator for this program. And without a doubt, the five people sitting in front of you have moved hearts, like tremendously, powerfully, humbly, faithfully, and we are in for a real treat. So we will begin today with our dear friend, Dr. Ali Haider. Dr. Ali Haider is an eye surgeon specializing in cornea, anterior segment, and external disease. He is also a clinical assistant professor at ophthalmology at the University of Louisville, an adjunct assistant professor at the School of Global Health at Michigan State University, and a medical doctor at the Kentucky Lions Eye Bank. Dr. Haider has also established successful eye project in developing nations, hiring and managing local eye surgeons who perform service with WorldSight, an organization dedicated to providing access to ocular health care in remote areas of the developing world.
Thank you for coming, and good morning to everybody. So as Sarah described, I'm a physician, and therefore by default, a student of science. I am also a person of faith. And the topic of this Festival of Faiths coming up is faith and science and what moves hearts. So I'm going to talk from my heart, and I'm going to talk about science, and I'm going to talk about faith. So I'm part of the scientific community, but I'm also part of a faith community. I have seen around the world, and even in this society, that there's a constant debate between the religious community and the scientific community. And often this debate is negative. There is almost a competition between the two. For example, when I'm sitting with my scientific community friends or people of science, talking about God, if I might say, is not cool. Or talking about organized religion is really bad. So But, you know, how do I deal with that as a person of faith who does believe in a creator, who does believe in creation, and who does believe in God, but I also believe in science? So, this is how I deal with it. I frankly don't care. Hold on. I don't care because to me, science and my faith are the same thing. Science to me means knowledge. It means how I learn about everything in the universe, whatever is around me, what I learn more about my creation, see the beauty and the complexity of how everything was created, whether it be a single cell in the human body, or whether it be how all these cells come together and make this human body, or whether it be an atom, a single atom where the electrons revolve in a perfect orbit, and how the galaxies and the sun, all the suns, revolve in perfect orbit. That, to me, is knowledge, and that is science. And when I see that, I see beauty of creation, and I see my faith. That is how science and religion become one for me. Another example I'm going to give is a couple of months ago, there was an instance in which I did an eye surgery for somebody, a transplant surgery for somebody who had been blind for 5 years. And he had a 3-year-old daughter he had never seen. So after the surgery, you take the patch off, the father can see the daughter for the first time. The patient starts crying, I start crying, my nurse starts crying. It is at moments like these that I realize that my tools, my scientific tools, and my faith and my humanity, it all comes and becomes one. So that's what I mean when I say I don't care. I am going to talk about the blood drive a little bit, and blood a little bit. This idea came about when we were at one of our community leaders and dear friend, Ms. Christy Brown's house. Sarah was there with me, and the question was put forth, what can we do as an exercise to bring the community together? Well, that is where the interfaith blood drive started, because blood is part of us. It is an extremely important organ. The reason the heart exists, Dr. George, is to pump blood, frankly. You know, for no other reason but to pump blood. It nourishes us, protects us. It is part of us. It is what makes us human. Also, metaphorically, we talk about blood all the time. We talk about blood relations. We talk about sacrifice. We talk about blood of Christ, don't we? You know, so we talk about it metaphorically, and we also talk about it as an extremely important organ. So to give a piece of ourself to save another human life, that to me is beautiful. That is union across all barriers, whether they're faith-based, color-based, or cultural-based. So that's why the blood drive came about. And please, we would request all of you to participate again this year during the Festival of Faith. And I'll end my comments by repeating a verse from the Holy Quran, which says that if you save one life, it is as if you have saved all of mankind. Thank you very much.
Our next speaker is Garrett Bartholomew. And the more we learned about this young man, the more humbling and more optimistic I felt to think that if we just get out of the way and let some of the young people in our community set the vision, we're going to be fine. So this is an example of it. Garrett is a senior at St. Xavier High School. He is a member of St. X's 56-Day Club, which you will tell us about. He's on the Student Activities Council and the Riken Service Club. Garrett is also a service coordinator for the chapter of the National Honor Society and the president of the St. Joseph of Arimathea Society, an organization which provides burials for those who are unable to afford a funeral. When he has free time, he likes to swim, play lacrosse and baseball, and what really impressed me, he also has a part-time job. I introduce you to Garrett Bartholomew.
Hi, good morning. I want to start off by giving a thank you to the Festival of Faith for having me. It's a true honor to be here, and thank you all for coming. I'm Garrett Bartholomew from St. Xavier High School. I'm here to talk about the 56-Day Blood Club at St. X. Among all of the activities listed earlier, the 56-Day Blood Club has affected me the most. In August of 2012, a senior from St. Xavier High School came in the new school year with a rare blood disorder that could only be treated with blood transfusions. He was also a member of the Rankin Service Club. The students reached out to his family to see how our school could help him in his difficult situation. Even though St. X had a blood drive in January, we wanted to find a way to help him in his current health struggles. The Red Cross suggested the best way to help was for our students to sign up for the September blood drive being held at Zaxby's restaurant on Blankenbaker Parkway in Middletown. Our humble goal was to donate 20 units of blood. The following week, when the service club passed out the sign-up sheet around during our lunches, they had over 50 students and faculty sign up to donate. A schedule was then created when students would show up so the wait time would not be too long for the students. Students who would show up at every 20 minutes during a four-hour period. Once they arrived at Zaxby's, they saw two Red Cross buses in the parking lot, and at this point there was no turning back. While on the bus, the students found out after they gave blood, they would receive a free dinner from Zaxby's, so they had a little bit of incentive. There was nothing like free food that gets the attention of a young man. We also found out, on the bus, each unit of blood has the potential to help save up to 3 lives. The first blood drive was a huge success. When members of the service leadership team got together the next week, they were greatly energized by their experience at the Red Cross blood drive. The conversation turned to finding out how we could sustain the momentum that was created because of our desire to help one student in need. The service club leaders began looking up how many days you had to wait before the next time they could donate. We found out that it was 56 days. It was then the leadership team of the Rankin Service Club that put together a proposal to the administration to start up the 56-day blood club. This very loose-knit club would not hold meetings, and anyone could join and was never obligated to donate. The administration was very much in support of creating this new club. The way the club has operated in the past 6 years is to simply announce the date of the drive at Zaxby's 2 weeks before the donation date. The Rankin Service Club leadership team members then go out throughout the cafeteria looking for 16-year-olds who are old enough to sign up. The 16-year-olds are given a waiver from their parents that must sign. We generally have between 35 and 40 students that sign up for the drives at Zaxby's. In addition, we have our annual blood drive in January, which is coming up, well, this year it's February 1st, where we donate between 175 and 200 units of blood in a single day. We estimate that St. X donates over 350 units of blood each year. One of the great things that has come out of the 56-day blood club is that many of our students go on to be regular donors once they graduate in college and beyond. It's a gift that keeps on giving. It is a very humble and rewarding experience to live out one's faith by the simple act of giving a vital part of ourselves, namely our blood, to a person in need. I personally have been heavily influenced by the 56-day blood club before I could even donate. I don't know why, but ever since my brother joined when he was 16, my mother was constantly telling me that I should donate blood every time I got the chance. My brother and I would hold donations at my mother's restaurant in Middletown. I don't know if y'all are aware of it, but the Cheddarbox Cafe. We held 2 donations where 2 buses came and took all donors. The buses were full all day at all times with walk-ups and my brother and I's friends coming, scheduling. So much like the system at Zaxby's, if you donated, you got a free meal. So by the time I turned 16, I was already informed on the club and believed in its mission. I was skeptical about donating at first because, much like everyone, I was very nervous whether it would hurt or if I would pass out or any other thoughts prompted by my paranoia. The process went very smoothly, aside from the anxiety. The nurses were nice as expected and were very helpful to me as a first-time donor. I walked in the bus, went through the questionnaire and other minor steps, and laid down at one of the stations. Before I knew it, the needle was in, out, and I was walking to get a free meal. The needle wasn't bad, and ironically, the procedure went by quickly. Since the first time I've donated, I tried to donate every chance I could. The 56-day blood club has been a very, very influential part of my high school career and will carry on through college and the years after. I feel that it is such a lasting impact because if you really think about it, you realize what great work you're doing for such a little cost. Nothing about donating blood harms a donor, and one unit of blood can save up to 3 lives. I always enjoy giving blood because it puts out so much for what the donor puts in. The 56-day blood club at St. X is trying to encourage members because we have so many healthy kids that can make such a big impact in the community. At our annual blood drive, St. X usually has about 200 donors, including faculty and staff. This year, we're aiming for 250. We are very grateful for those who come out and donate, but would like to heavily increase our numbers. The special aspect of the 56-day blood club at St. X is the fact that we are the only club that doesn't have a regular meeting. However, we bond as a club and have a sense of community every time we meet, either at a donation or at the sign-up sheet at our service club meeting. It seems we have a sense for who we are within the club, but never really address ourselves as a large community on campus. The frequent donors whom I've been donating with for the past 2 years know each other very well. However, the other members do not speak on a regular basis. But we still work and serve as any other club would. Our blood is one of the most sacred aspects of our physiology, meaning we couldn't live without it. Moreover, being able to donate units of blood to a person or multiple persons that you will most likely meet is very humbling. I feel that if we donators were able to see the result of donations, there would be a lot more donors. Lastly, I would like to again thank you all and Festival of Faith for having me. Have a great rest of your day.
This is kind of an exploration of the difference between knowledge and wisdom. I don't know if you all picked up on it, but the stats he was talking about, the units that they collect, are 5 and 6 times more than an average blood bank. These numbers are just extraordinary. Our next speaker is Dr. George Pantelos, a cardiovascular explorer of 45 years. Much of his work has involved the development of surgical devices and procedures to make the research projects possible. Since July 2000, he's been a professor of cardiovascular and thoracic surgery and biomedical engineering at the University of Louisville. His research is focused on understanding and treating heart failure with mechanical devices, including artificial hearts, ventricular assist devices, and cardiopulmonary support systems, which he has helped develop in patients that have 2 legs and patients that have 4 legs, patients that have little hearts and patients that have great big hearts. And hopefully you'll add a little bit of the research he's been doing over the last 20 years with NASA and the effects on the heart of gravity, I imagine. Dr. George started his own blood donation career around 40 years ago in Columbus, Ohio. He is now a regular platelet donor with the Red Cross in Louisville and has served on the board of directors for several years, focusing on biomedical services. For nearly 10 years, Dr. George has worked with students at the University of Louisville to convince the FDA to eliminate the restrictions on sexually active gay men from being blood donors. We welcome Dr. George Pantelos to the stage.
First of all, full disclosure, I'm A positive. I've attended many events at the Festival of Faith through the years. The first time I've had the chance to participate. So thanks to Sarah and the organizing committee for making that possible. I need your help to start, and I'm going to repeat a couple of questions that you were already asked, so I hope you don't mind answering them again to help me make my first point. By a raising of your hands, how many of you have received a blood, platelet, or plasma donation, or know of someone who has? Okay, that's pretty much everybody. Now, by a show of hands, how many of you have been a volunteer blood, platelet, or plasma donor? Okay, good to see a high level of anticipation. Now, for those of you who didn't raise your hand, to the second question, my guess is it's because you're not medically qualified to be a donor. Or more importantly, like me, for a long time you thought that donating blood was a good thing, but you just hadn't gotten around to it. In the end of January in 1978, I was a grad student at Ohio State up in Columbus, and we had one of those dreadful Midwestern storms that snowed followed by layers of ice, kind of like the storm we had here 10 years ago in January. I got a phone call from the woman I was dating at the time, Teresa. She lived on South Campus, I lived on North Campus. And she said she just heard that they didn't want people to go out, but because of trauma, there had been an urgent need for blood donors, and the Red Cross was asking if you could safely get to a blood donation center, please do. Well, as it turns out, our Red Cross Blood Donation Center was on the 7th floor of University Hospital, about halfway between where we were. So we threw on our parkas and our boots, and we both slid across campus from opposite directions and met at the hospital. We went through the health history, and then they get to that moment of truth where they take the drop of blood and they determine your hemoglobin level. Teresa's was fine. She went on to donate. Mine was not, and I was deferred, which I've come to realize is the polite euphemism for being totally rejected. Oh, man. So I waited after she donated, had a snack at the snack bar, and we got down to the front door. She gave me a kiss to try to chase away the dejection, and we went off in opposite directions. So as I'm trudging, feeling dreadful, back on the way to my dorm, I'm thinking, you know, I'm a physiology student. I know a little bit about what makes hemoglobin. I also have a little nutrition background, and I know some of the things that if you're iron deficient that you can eat to boost your iron and maybe make more hemoglobin. So I diverted from the dorm to the local grocery store where I bought a big box of raisins to supplement my cereal every morning. And just to be sure, I stopped by the vitamin aisle and I bought a bottle of Femiron. So for the next 7 days, I piled raisins on my cereal and supplemented my multiple vitamin with a Femiron, went back to the donor center, my hemoglobin was happy, and I've been donating ever since. Years later, I am in Salt Lake City, which as you know, its origins is faith-inspired. And not surprisingly, you meet some pretty zealous missionaries. One of them was Betty, a very small but very dedicated woman. For years, Betty made her pitch to me. And not surprisingly, Salt Lake City being Salt Lake City, I had what you might consider a radical religious conversion experience. That was, instead of being a whole blood donor, I became a platelet and plasma donor. You might have guessed, Betty was the platelet coordinator at the donor center. Years later, now I'm at the University of Louisville, and I'm walking into this cardiac surgery ICU one morning to check on one of the artificial heart patients that I was helping out with, and I encounter one of the nurses who I'm well acquainted with, but I hadn't seen her for a long time, because she had been on maternity leave. And I asked how motherhood was treating her, and it was clear that it was a mixed experience. It was wonderful to have her baby, but then she told me about how the childbirth process had been dreadful. She lost a lot of blood, her life was in jeopardy, but fortunately she was able to have blood and platelet transfusions. And I said to her, I'm a platelet donor. And she looked at me and she said, I'll bet some of them were yours. And she gave me a big hug. And the point is, you know, donating blood and platelets and plasma is something that only humans can do for each other. We often do it without knowing who the recipient is going to be. But we do it because, just like Ali and Garrett said, it's the right thing to do. Now, being people of various faiths, one of the things that we have in common is the trying to promote a full human experience. We try to do things that elevate our spirits and our lives and our interactions with each other. And we try to reject things that suppress and discriminate against our brothers and sisters. And that was the context of the next story that I'm going to tell you. I've been involved with the Red Cross since I've been here in Louisville and on several committees, and consequently every day I get an electronic newsletter about various stories related to blood donation. Occasionally there were stories about the MSM 77 effort. That is, when the AIDS epidemic started, when the folks at the FDA who regulate blood products were doing their studies, the blip in the subpopulation chart was gay men. They seem to have a much higher prevalence of AIDS than anybody else. And the FDA is a regulatory agency. They're very conservative. And so in the interest of public safety, they decided gay men are no longer allowed to donate blood. They have a lifetime deferral. Now, at the time, that might have seemed extreme, except that we didn't know what AIDS was. We didn't know how to detect it. We didn't know how to treat it. So as disappointing as that was, you can almost understand why the FDA had to make that decision. But fast forward many years, we now have excellent education on safe sexual practices regardless of your orientation. We now have nucleic acid testing that with incredibly high precision, we can detect the presence of HIV in blood. Now, there are some subtleties in how HIV behaves that still make you have cautions. But with this, the American Association of Blood Banks and all the organizations that work on providing blood worked with the committee at the FDA in saying, we now can protect the nation's blood supply. And there are several perfectly healthy gay men who would like to be blood donors too. We need to change this lifetime deferral. I'm friends with Brian Buford, who started the LGBT Center at the University of Louisville that's there for students, staff, and faculty. And one day when I got one of these messages, I sent Brian an email. I said, do you have any students that are interested in this issue? Seconds later, I got a response. Funny you should ask. I just got two students who got an activism grant to prevent blood drives from happening on campus. I said, we need to talk. So I went down to the Intersection, which is the LGBT student center there in the Red Barn. I met with Brian and with Lindsay and with Grace. And they told me the situation, that during a blood drive at the Red Barn, a well-intended but ill-informed blood drive worker came into the student lounge and asked them if they wanted to donate blood. And they weren't going to take no for an answer. I understood their anger. But I said, is there any way we can transform the energy of that anger into energy for positive change? And I said, it's not the Red Cross, it's the policy at the FDA that you're fighting. So they said, sure. And so instead of being at odds with the Red Cross, they partnered with the Red Cross. And every time there was going to be a blood drive on campus, they tabled. They had an information table that told about the band. They had petitions to send to the FDA to encourage them to change their policy. And they did this for a couple of years. Finally, they wrote a letter to the person at the FDA who runs that section of it. They sent the petitions. They explained their position. And it was one small but one very effective grassroots effort that added to the overall effort that was going on. And in, I think it was December 20th, 2014, I was busily working in my office and I started getting a flurry of text messages. Turns out the FDA just announced that they were going to change the lifetime deferral. Amazing news. They were thinking of 1 year. Needless to say, my students were very impressed about the fact that you can change government for the positive. It takes a year to come up with a plan. So we commented to the FDA about how we thought that plan should be implemented. And then once they had an implementation plan, it takes another year to actually get it in place. And so 2 years later in December, there was an announcement that the Red Cross had finally completed their implementation plan and they had it ready for the FDA and approved by the FDA. And I noticed the next time I went to donate platelets, that the one question that they ask you in history is, are you a man who's had sex with another man since 1977, to being, are you a man who's had sex with a man in the last year? Now, some would argue that a one-year deferral is the same as a lifetime deferral. But at least it was a change. And now we're in this period where perfectly healthy gay men now have the opportunity to donate. In fact, it was interesting. One of the students who participated in this was a perfectly healthy young man. His parents were in an automobile accident. They needed lots of blood. He went and donated. And then he married his husband. And all of a sudden, he went from being a perfectly healthy man who could donate blood to being a perfectly healthy man who couldn't. This didn't seem right. And that really energized some of the effort. So what we're hoping is that in 2021, 5 years after the initial change in implementation, there'll be another study. They'll see if there's been any change in risk to the nation's blood supply. And if it's not, we're hoping that that will be sufficiently compelling evidence for the FDA to change the policy to remove any deferral so that anybody who comes to be a blood donor can be treated on an individual risk basis. So stay tuned.
That was, in order, Dr. Ali Haider, Garrett Bartholomew, and Dr. George Pantelos from the kickoff event of the 2019 Festival of Faiths on the theme, Faith and Science, What Moves Hearts. It's Ethics Forward on 106.5 FM Forward Radio in lovely downtown Louisville, Kentucky. We'll be back in a moment with two more amazing speakers from this event. Back on Ethics Forward. Next, we'll hear Pastor Corey Shaw.
One of the things that we are blessed with the Festival of Faith office is that we can have some of the conversations that are being had in the community at large, but we have the privilege of looking at these contemporary concerns through the lens of faith. Our next speaker actually curated a session, one of my all-time favorites in
15.
And it was a panel of millennial pastors talking about the issues of othering. And it was handled in such a graceful and spiritual way that he's become a fave of ours in the office. So this is Pastor Daniel Corey Scholl. He's the senior pastor at Burnett Avenue Baptist Church in Louisville, Kentucky. Under his leadership, the congregation has experienced tremendous growth through the addition of hundreds of families into the church membership. They've been creating relevant ministries, implementing 21st century technology, and embracing new and dynamic ways of engaging in ministry for the purpose of life transformation. In addition to preaching four times per every weekend and providing leadership to a thriving congregation, he serves on a number of community boards and institutions of higher education. He mentors youth and is the author of a new book, Detours to Greatness. He's a proponent of education, and he's recently been elected by the citizens of this city to serve on the Jefferson County Public Schools School Board. He holds degrees from Fisk University and Louisville Presbyterian Theological Seminary and works as an adjunct professor at Louisville area colleges. So welcome, Corey.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Good morning. It's always such a joy to be here with Festivals of Faith and Sarah and the entire team. I'm indebted to you all. And I think Louisville is truly becoming what we aspire to be, a compassionate city because of the wonderful work of Festivals of Faith. I'm so happy to be here with you today. God moves in mysterious ways. God's wonders to perform. She plants her feet out on the seas and she rides upon the storm. Deep in unsearchable minds of never failing skill, God treasures up God's bright designs and works her sovereign will. In 1951, a young, poor mother of five children named Henrietta Lacks visited the John Hopkins Hospital, the only hospital that would serve black people in that area, complaining of vaginal bleeding. Upon examination, a large malignant tumor was discovered on her cervix. Immediately, she underwent radium treatments for cervical cancer. During a biopsy, a sample of her cancer cells were retrieved and sent to Dr. George Guy's tissue lab, where something magnificent was discovered. Dr. Guy had long been collecting cells from patients who came to Johns Hopkins Hospital with cervical cancer, but each sample quickly died. However, Mrs. Lack's cells doubled every 20 to 24 hours. These incredible cells are now used to study the effects of toxins, drugs, hormones, and viruses' impact on the growth of cancer cells without experimenting on humans. And now we are glad that the proper arrangements have been made with Henrietta Lacks' family for her to receive the credit for the scientific work that has been done on her cells for the past 60 years. Henrietta Lacks' cells played a critical role in the development even of the polio vaccine. Because of scientific innovation, the life of Henrietta Lacks truly became immortal, with people untold benefiting from her contribution to humanity. God moves in mysterious ways. God's wonders to perform. She plants her feet out on the seas and she rides upon the storm. Deep in unsearchable mines of never failing skill, God treasures up God's bright designs and works her sovereign will. What moves the heart? What are the elements that foster a deep and abiding connection between us as fellow travelers through this world? Of course, there are the usual culprits of art, music, education, and athletics. However, it must be acknowledged that life can only achieve the beauty and buoyancy that it is designed to achieve through the interplay between faith and science. In my religious tradition, this has not always been the case. There have been times when science has been shunned as undermining God's work in the world. That was that terrible situation that you may remember from history class with Galileo. There have been times when prayer has been encouraged as a replacement for responsible medical attention. However, I'm glad to report that we've come a long way from those days in most Christian communities. The science and the medical advances that are subjects of professional journals now find expression in the lives of the participants in our faith communities. How often I am summoned to the hospital to bow at the bedside of a person who is experiencing some tremendous medical situation. And how comforted men and women are when they see that doctor, that nurse, that technician skillfully cause them to resume their health because of medical innovation, because of technology, because of the scientific revolution. It reminds me that God moves in mysterious ways, God's wonders to perform. She plants her feet out on the seas and she rides upon the storm. Deep in unsearchable minds of never failing skill, God treasures up God's bright design and works her sovereign will. One of my favorite pastimes has been the watching of that thrilling, intellectually riveting show, Dancing with the Stars. I'll be the first to admit that I am just in love with that show. I watch with bated breath as the stars glide ever so gracefully across the stage. It amazes me how they submit their bodies to such creative choreography that culminates in breathtaking performances that thrill their worldwide audiences. Perhaps what makes the show so thrilling is the partnership between athletes and entertainers with professional dancers. The winners are always the team that masters the art of dancing together. I think that's true of faith and science. Humanity wins when faith and science dance together. God moves in mysterious ways, her wonders to perform. She plants her feet out on the seas, and she rides upon the storm. Thank you.
Our final wisdom keeper here is Alex Kimura.
She's the former executive director and co-founder of Sharing America's Marrow, a nationwide grassroots campaign dedicated to fighting blood cancer and blood diseases. In 2015, Kimura and her sister Sam and friend Taylor undertook a 50-state road trip, registering over 24,000 potential heroes to the National Bone Marrow Registry. She is also the director and producer of a feature-length documentary about their journey called In Our Bones. Alex graduated summa cum laude from Western Kentucky University with a degree in social justice and equity studies in 2012, and she's worked on a fundraising team at the Livestrong Foundation before starting SAM. I'm delighted to introduce Alex Kimura.
Thank you. So much. So excited to be here today. As she said, in 2015, my sister, my best friend, and I traveled to all 50 states signing up potential bone marrow donors. I was 24 years old and started a nonprofit called Sharing America's Marrow, or SAM, SAM, in honor of my sister Sam, who needed a bone marrow transplant and couldn't find a matching donor. We sold our cars, we raised money to live out of a van and travel around the country trying to save my sister's life and the lives of thousands of more patients fighting diseases like leukemia and lymphoma, and hopefully trying to give my sister a bucket list trip while we were at it. We held 193 events in 1 year in 167 cities. And we saw the sunrise come up over the Grand Canyon. We saw grizzly bears in Alaska. We danced around the world's largest ball of twine. Had an amazing experience. And like she said, we signed up over 24,000 donors, which has led to 400 potential life-saving matches, and that number keeps going on and on. Thank you. But it was the worst year of my life. So that's probably not what you were expecting me to say, and that's not really what I'm supposed to say. When you do selfless work, you're not supposed to talk about how it affected you. But even when people say, "What about all the people you helped?" it's really hard for me to not think about the emotional toll that this year took on me. So I am very, very proud of all the people that we've helped and continue to help, but our campaign to save lives almost killed me. I ended the year exhausted, depressed, bloated from all of the gas station snacks, and feeling like I had nothing left to give the world. But I'm not trying to discourage you from starting your own movement. I'm actually cheering you on. But I do want to give you some lessons that I learned while we were on the road, and hopefully that will help you when you're starting your movement. So I want to talk about the three types of people that we met while we were on the road, and the three types of people that you can be when you're out there trying to make an impact. And there were so many ways I could have taken this, as you can imagine, of a year of doing this kind of stuff, but there's a book called Give and Take by Adam Grant, and I really think that will help me frame our year. And he talks about reciprocity types. He said there's three types of people. There's takers, there's matchers, and there's givers. And the first group we met were the takers, and it sure felt like there were a lot of takers out there. But before I go any farther, you might have already checked out when I said bone marrow because you're terrified. So maybe you saw that episode of Grey's Anatomy where Izzy is donating bone marrow, but it looks like they stuck a wine corkscrew into her spine and she's screaming. Or maybe you saw 7 Pounds where Will Smith is wide awake on the operating room table and a doctor's nailing a syringe into his back. That's not the reality. The media loves to portray bone marrow donation as this insanely painful procedure because it's quality entertainment, I guess. But unfortunately, it has led to some really bad misconceptions about bone marrow donation. 80% of the time, most bone marrow donors are actually just giving blood stem cells, which is similar to giving platelets or plasma. It's a blood donation. The other 20% of donors give bone marrow, but it's done under general anesthesia. So you don't feel any pain, you're not laying there screaming. You might be sore and have some bruising afterwards, but you could potentially save someone's life. And if you get called to be a bone marrow donor, you might be the one person in the world that could donate to that patient. It's very rare to be a match. It's like winning the lottery because it's based on DNA. All we were doing on the road was getting people to fill out a consent form and doing a cheek swab to collect that DNA sample. But as you just experienced, that's a lot of information to share and a lot to absorb, even if it's good news. So what we experienced was about 19 out of 20 people that we asked if they wanted to save a life today by joining the registry, either saying no or just ignoring us and walking away. And I bet a lot of those people would fall into this taker's mentality. So the takers are thinking, what's in it for me? Is this worth my time and my effort? What am I going to get out of this? And so the pitch, do you want to save a life today, didn't really resonate with the takers. So we tried a be a hero campaign, and that worked for some people. They really could get something out of that, I will be a hero. But takers are doing what's best for them, and being a hero might not be on everybody's list. So the thing is, it's easy for you to be a taker too when you're doing this kind of work. You can get wrapped up in the good feelings of helping other people, but that really sets you up for disappointment. I remember being in a cold van in Alabama just about 2 weeks after we left on our year-long tour and saying to each other, when is this going to be cool? Like, when are we going to be recognized for what we're doing? We were being takers. We wanted acknowledgement for our hard work, and that was a slippery slope. The next group are the matchers, and the author of this book says that the majority of people are matchers. So matchers are thinking, I'll help you, but I want something back in return. And we could easily see this when we were on the road. So we gave out free candy, free beer, free pizza, t-shirts. Just if people came and talked to us, they got a water bottle. And it really worked a lot of times. And we signed up a lot of people because they saw we had snacks and they wanted to know what we were talking about. You would be surprised how much time people will give you in exchange for Snickers, honestly. And there's other people that they don't want anything back, but they want the social benefits. They want to look cool. They want to look selfless. Their friends are doing it. They want to fit in. And that's okay, too. There's other matchers that are competitive. They'll do anything just to feel like they're winning. And this social pressure kind of groupthink even works on a bigger scale. In Germany, almost everyone is on the registry. It's weird if you're not a bone marrow donor. And so therefore, they have the biggest registry in Europe and do the most donations out of any registry in the world. So I think what we learned was to indulge in this nature. Don't fight against it. Let people give, but just realize that they might want something back. So give out the candy, let your volunteers hashtag serving others so they get more likes on their page. They're still helping, and it's just human nature. But I would warn you about being a matcher when you're doing the work, that this nonprofit work, because it's a roller coaster. We tried to protect ourselves sometimes by not overly investing. So we would say, all right, if people care at this event today, we'll care. If they're over it, I'm not going to invest myself. And then that just made our bad events even worse because we were checked out. And then our good events where people were really involved and really caring, we would be exhausted afterwards because we were so vulnerable and giving so much energy. So be careful of being a matcher. And the last group are the givers, the sweet, sweet givers. They are out there. They are rare, but they're out there. And they're the people that were there in the hundreds to help my sister when she first got diagnosed because they just wanted to do anything they could to help her. They're the people that stop and listen when we say, hey, do you want to save a life today? And we share some more information about bone marrow because there are people that want the facts because science can move people. Truth can move hearts. Knowledge can free hearts from limiting falsehoods and misconceptions. So there's definitely good things about sharing this science. But there are givers that don't care what the facts are. They just want to help. I bet a lot of people in this room are givers, and I think that's awesome. But from my experience and from this book, I will warn you to set boundaries for yourself. It's easy for a giver to get taken advantage of, to be a doormat, to just give and give and give and burn yourself out and lose your passion. So think about what's best for the world, but also think about what's best for you. And I will wrap this up, but faith in science and what moves people. So I can't tell you why 24,000 people signed up. I can't give you the answer. And I also don't know why hundreds of thousands of more walked away. Maybe it was based on their reciprocity type or how much time they have or if they were hungry or felt guilty. But I do think that you should try every different thing when you're going out there into the world. Try different experiments. Use the scientific method to figure out what's best for you. But also remember that there's a lot of faith in this as well. And I think you need to think about What moves your heart as the mover of this movement? For me, I wish I could go back and tell that girl that was driving around the country, the one that felt like a piece of me broke every time someone said no, the one that was trying to fill that void in herself with Chex Mix and M&Ms just to get through it, that she was doing the best she could, but she was not the answer. And it's really important, I think, to have faith in yourself to start, to know that you can make a difference, even if it's small differences, if it's little steps, it's still big leaps towards change. So don't be afraid to start, but to not crumble under these massive weights of these challenges we're taking on, I think we need to think about, again, that we're not carrying this alone. Yes, I do think we should recruit other people to join us, volunteers, friends, board members, just a loved one that will pour you a glass of wine at the end of the night if you need to laugh and just relax. But to also remember that while we are small, there are forces bigger than us out there. And I really encourage you to take on the world, but remember that it's not your job alone to save it. So focus on the science, figuring out what works best, the different approaches you can take, and then remember that you have to remember yourself and think about what keeps you going when the tide is turned against you. Is it sharing your personal story? Is it remembering the faces of the people you're trying to help? Whatever it is, remember yourself and remember that you have a lot to give. So let's get moving.
And that was the amazing Alex Kimura speaking about her experience going around the country signing up people for the National Bone Marrow Registry. And before that, you heard from Halita Haddock, Mayor Greg Fisher, Sarah Riggs Reed, Dr. Ali Hyder, Garrett Bartholomew, Dr. George Pantelos, and Pastor Corey Shaw. I want to thank the Center for Interfaith Relations for allowing me to broadcast this kickoff event. For more information, go to festivalofaiths.org. Also, thanks again to Chad Haverly of Breaker Box Productions for making the recording, and to Maddie Claybo for editing and production assistance, and to the U of L Philosophy Department for making her work possible. We'll be back next week with more Ethics Forward. Thanks for listening. Oh,